Welcome to the Business of Security podcast brought to you by TrustMap for Security Performance Management. Your hosts are Josh Bruning and Chad Beckman. Today, their guest is John Checco, CISO in residence at Proofpoint. Now let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it and keep it running, it will blow up.
We also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats,
Welcome to the Business of Security podcast. I am your host, Josh Bruning, and I'm here with Chad Beckman, a familiar voice here at Business of Security. And in the spirit of succession, Chad will be passing the baton and I'm ready to carry it. Our guest today is John Checco, resident CISO at Proofpoint. And I'll just allow John to say a few things about himself and introduce himself and say a few things about Proofpoint. Thanks for joining us today, John.
Josh and Chad, thanks for having me. My name is John Checco. I am the resident CISO for financial services at Proofpoint. Proofpoint is a cybersecurity company that focuses on threat protection, information protection, and compliance. However, today's session is really about succession planning. So I am looking forward to the content.
Excellent. Chad, would you like to say a few words before we dig in?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate you taking the lead on really hosting this podcast. Always happy to be a participant, co-host at any time. And John, really appreciate you having you on the show and reaching out to us to participate. Looking forward to our conversation on CISO succession planning. And what a great way to also really describe this as we transition hosts here on the Business of Security podcast. So with that, let's jump on in. And, you know, John, tell us a little bit about kind of first how you got started in security and maybe what your first role as a CISO kind of entailed that eventually maybe led you on to this topic of succession planning.
You know, there's a famous quote saying that great leaders aren't born, greatness is thrust upon you. And that's kind of where I started. I was actually a member of a cybersecurity organization called InfraGuard, and the president or CEO at that time had left unexpectedly, and they were looking for a new leader. I raised my hand and learned a lot from how much was planned out and how much wasn't planned out. So from succession planning, the first thing I did as a president of InfraGuard was develop a succession plan for 4 years. And that was kind of my foray into the succession planning. However, from the cybersecurity end of things, I was actually a programmer for many, many years. I went up into system analysis and system design, worked my way up. But a lot of that was being outsourced in the late 90s. So security seemed to be that common fit where it was still staying onshore. There was still a lot of need for it. And it was still generic enough that you could put your name out there for different types of fields of specialties and still be regarded as an expert.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long have you been with Proofpoint?
I've been with Proofpoint 2.5 years now. Prior to that, I was the BISO, Business Information Security Officer, for Global Markets at Bank of America. And prior to that, I was the CISO for Bloomberg's personal wealth product, Bloomberg Black.
Oh, excellent. Certainly a veteran of cybersecurity, and appreciate you sharing kind of your wealth of information. As we kind of dig into this whole topic of succession planning, you know, there's conversations we get into with customers and your peers in the industry about kind of the cybersecurity source of record, right? What happens oftentimes is CISOs go into an organization and they kind of get a lay of the land, do a updated roadmap, perhaps engage a firm or do an assessment on their own internally and re-baseline the organization. And with CISO turnover being what it is, what is it, John? It's probably what, 24 months or maybe a little longer than that right now?
About 26 months on average, yes.
Yeah, 26 months. Okay. Yeah. So what happens then is, you know, as you've seen this, organizations then bring in a new CISO every 26 months. And then the entire cycle generally starts again. A new baseline is established, perhaps tweaking or a brand new, completely updated roadmap, maybe for good reasons, maybe just to put their own stamp on things. So as we talk about this, how what are some of the benefits of proper succession planning from a business lens standpoint?
Well, there's a saying that, you know, security or great leaders are not what happens today, but what they leave behind. And you want that continuity of projects. And that's a lot of times CISOs, like you said, try and re-baseline the security posture. And it's not really necessary if you join an organization and you've already believe in what they're doing from a security standpoint, you should be working to extend that. And I just want to make a quick point about the average life expectancy or career expectancy of a CISO. People were talking about the great resignation around the pandemic times, and the average tenure of the CISO is just 26 months. But really, it hasn't changed much. Back in 2017, according to Enterprise Strategy Group, the average tenure of a CISO was only between 2 and 4 years, so about 36 months. So it really hasn't changed that much. And that's why I think succession planning is really important, because this is going to continue. We're not going to have 20 or 30 year CISOs in our organizations anymore.
Correct. Yeah. And as you prepare as a CISO, using the term you in this case, prepare for that succession planning, what are some tools or guidelines that CISOs today can begin thinking about as they create a source of record for their predecessor?
No, and that's great. And then over the years, I've kind of come up with a six-step process or six tenets. Number one, what's the right successor, right? Are we hiring for culture? Are we hiring for personality? Are we hiring for technical expertise? That depends on your organization and where you are in that maturity curve. And that's important. So finding the right successor is really important. And then we have to start actually building playbook for transfer of ownership, not just accounts and entitlements, but also projects and roadmaps. And once you transfer that roadmap, the new CISO can change that roadmap, but they have a baseline to start with. The third step is really about relationship building. That's the upward facing building. So being introduced to other executives, being introduced to the board, basically holding that person's hand or building that relationship with the old CISO in place or the CIO in place helps further that political capital. And we'll talk about political capital, I guess, later. Then there's the downward handoffs, right? Reaching out to your teams, reaching out to your partners, reaching out to your suppliers, reaching out to your contractors. That actually happens most often, but the transfer of ownership and relationship building don't happen that often. And then, of course, the two operational things are figuring out what your strategic tasks are, the roadmap, and building an operational cadence. And those are, again, that first 90 days or first 100 days of the CISO, that's where that happens.
Building out the cadence in the first 100 days of the CISO, very interesting. We actually launched a toolkit recently about that topic, specifically the first 100 days of the CISO. Can you maybe dive into that a little bit, that particular point?
Sure. So we're assuming at this point that you have like a roadmap, you have a direction. But once all that is set, you actually have to now start figuring out what's the proper cadence and who you want to meet with at what times. So as a new CISO, you want to be meeting with the board maybe 4 times a year, quarterly. And you probably want to be able to present your own information rather than having the CIO or whoever you report to present your information. That allows you to have direct one-on-one relationships with the board and be able to answer items that you can answer. And when you can't answer items, you know, you have an action item to go back and research it. The next is the executive touch points. And I'm working my way down granularity wise. But the executive touch points are basically working with your peers. As a CISO, CISO is one of the only roles that involves the CFO, the COO, the CTO, business units, all together. Because when you extend the cybersecurity framework to all these areas, they all need to have a say in how it's being performed. Then there's the risk reporting and registry. So that's more of the task-based security. That's looking at your existing inherent risks, your mitigations, your residual risks, and what you've decided to risk transfer, risk accept, or risk mitigate. when you get to the quantitative side of CISO succession, that's really the quantitative side. But then under that, you have to look at the particular projects and programs that are being done by the frontline business units, as well as the security operations units, and help them succeed. So you're working with them on more frequent calls. And then of course you have your own team status calls. Me, I'm not a big fan of having daily calls, but I want to make sure that the team does document their status, we have an open door policy so we can talk about the things that are outside the norm, right? I don't need to know your normal status. I need to know the things that I can help you with.
Yeah, kind of going back to empowering the team as the leader of the team, the security team, instead of being a task manager. I like that. So when we talk about kind of identifying a successor, talking about this topic prior, a lot of times people start encouraging to really look for a good deputy CISO or like a role you had in another company, BISO even is a great example of that. And identifying, you know, someone that can really be the right-hand person so that if the CISO moves on to another organization, retires or whatever the case might be, they have somebody that can really step in and begin operating that already understands the business. But that's probably a perfect use case. Certainly that doesn't always occur in every organization. What's been your experience there from a staffing and kind of a qualifying the backup to the CISO, if you will?
So that really depends on the organization and the culture. So I'm a big fan of promoting from within, because that's why people are loyal to a company, is because of that chance to move up. However, if there is a cultural imbalance within the organization, sometimes you have to go to the outside to bring in someone with a new set of eyes or a new way of doing things that was successful in their other industry. You know, it's CISO and other security-based jobs don't have true standardized job descriptions. And so a lot of times the requisitions that go out there are very vague, or they're all over the place, or they're too broad or too narrow. So I like to talk about what I think the primary qualities I look for in a candidate. And that's really, you have to be a people person. You have to show leadership skills. You have to know how to be organizational and navigate the politics of an organization. Obviously, you need to have some security knowledge and some security experience, but not necessarily in your industry. Outside experience is actually a good thing if you're hiring from the outside. And finally, you want to find someone who has a good cultural fit or can disrupt the culture. If it's a hostile culture, you want someone to come in and change that culture in a positive way. And of course, the secondary part, which is by no means minor, it's still a major part of the succession program, is looking at the skill sets, right? Do they know how to prioritize? Do they know time management? Do they know change management? That's a big thing, especially if you're bringing in someone from the outside. And of course, the typical administrative and program management is also very important. So these are, again, there's no standard, but these are the types of qualities that I look for when I'm reaching out to find a successor.
Yeah, it's a great outline and very interesting aspects to consider. I mean, what you just said, John, is essentially considerations for anyone looking to become a CISO in a new company. Those are great questions to ask. Why are they filling this position with somebody new? What is the culture like? What kind of change agent do I need to be? Or is it going to be operate, you know, at current state? All really fantastic considerations as someone who may be stepping into a new company's CISO position. Josh, I know you had a couple of questions you also wanted to highlight for John.
I do. So along those lines, John, when you're handing off to the incoming CISO, how do you hand over your failures?
Okay. Well, I wouldn't say failures, but I'd say challenges, or what I would say is open items. So you have to lay out what the roadmap was, what the original vision was, and where the vision failed. And maybe there are good reasons why the vision failed. It could be a lack of budget. It could be lack of interest by the frontline business units. There's a lot of reasons that are outside of your control that something would fail or something that's still open. So I think you should be really candid with that when you're doing the transfer of ownership. but allow that new CISO to be able to look at it from a different perspective. They may have different ideas or different ways of working around it. And that talks about when I talked earlier about being introduced to the board, being introduced to the CISO level or the C levels, I'm talking about political capital. These are the relationships where you don't want to have to build political capital from scratch, because you'll never get anywhere with that. You want to be able to take someone else's political capital. And this is the whole idea of champions and mentors and coaches, right? They share that their own political capital with their mentees and with their students. And these relationships now can start from a higher level than they would from scratch. So bringing someone in and giving them that strategic direction and your roadmaps allows them to start from where your roadmap ended, right? Or where your roadmap is today, and either fork off or be able to follow it. And again, with the failures, you want to be able to have someone address those. But again, it's not necessarily something that is a bad thing.
And you mentioned when you're at InfraGuard, you had a 4-year plan. So has that changed today? How far out are you planning before you pass the mantle to the incoming CISO? Are we looking at 2 years out, 4 years out?
So the first thing we do is whenever we bring in a new board member, most of our leaders in InfraGuard come from the board. So whenever we bring in a new board member, we actually have a board workshop. Laying out what we do, what the mission is, what the vision is, and what the expectations of every single board member are. So we have assigned tasks or assigned roles for every board member. And that allows us to make the succession easier, because then what happens is they already have that baseline knowledge, and they already have they know what the expectations are. So when we're handing off, then it's simply a list of here are the projects that are in play, which they should already be involved in. Here's a list of the contacts that you may have heard of but never had direct access to. So that becomes a much easier task when they are already involved in a lot of the decision making process.
And what incoming skills do you look for?
From a board perspective or from a C-level perspective?
C-level perspective.
Yeah, from the skills, you got to be a people person. Number one, you have to know how to communicate. You know, I'm a firefighter on the side. I'm a volunteer firefighter for 40 years. And I went through the chair, which is lieutenant, captain, and so on. And an old chief told me that you don't have to know the answer to every question, but you have to be there for them to ask the question. And that's really, really important. So presence is really important. That's why I love that open door policy. You don't have to know everything. You just need to be able to have that face and be there and be accessible. So that's the number one thing. Number two is you have to be able to consume a lot of information and quickly be able to prioritize it, figure out what's important, what you should keep on doing, start or stop doing, and then use your time management skills to be able to plan that out. Those are the top three. I think change management would be number four. Change management also goes into basically being a people person and being able to be transparent and building out your roadmap, even though it may conflict with existing programs out there. There's a lot of personality involved with the right successor.
Just so you know, right now there are tons of prospective successors who are lining up and just taking notes. So I'm hoping that this is very useful for those people who are looking to get into, I don't know if you're leaving soon at a proof point, but.
No. But it's not a competition. That's the thing. It's not a competition. We should be helping each other out, right? The security world is actually a very small world, and we should be helping promote people who aren't CISOs into the CISO role eventually. And we should be glad and being working together to make sure that the community stays there, or the community itself has the right face to the public. Because I think if we start going down an authoritarian path, the future for us isn't going to be so bright.
So let's dig into that a little bit. Do you prefer to choose a successor from the C-suite community, or would you prefer to promote someone that you've worked with from your own ranks or from some other side of the business? You know, this is not best practices here. This is John Checo. What do you prefer in your ideal world?
I'm a big fan of hiring ex-military. So folks coming out of the military have this idea of, it's called mission first. So they have learned how to listen. They've learned how to prioritize. They've learned a lot of the skills that I'm looking for. And again, from a military perspective, so coming into a professional perspective, that gives them, to me, one, that's one step less that I have to teach them. So I think that's kind of where I go when I'm looking for the next C-suite executive. That being said, you have to have some experience. I'm a big fan, even though a CISO doesn't need to be technical, they need to be business risk related. I'm a big fan of CISOs who have been programmers, who have had some technical skills, because they need to be able to look downward at the operations and you know, call a bluff when they see one.
Would you call yourself more of a strategic CISO rather than technical or tactical? Or do you see that distinction as even being relevant to the way that you do your job? Or for that time when you're looking for a successor, do you want someone who's coming in with your skill set who might be, you know, on the strategic or the technical side, or you look for the opposite?
So, Josh, that's a great question. Here at Proofpoint, I am a strategic CISO. So I actually work on strategies and tactics that have worked or playbooks, business playbooks that have worked for me in other areas and try and apply them. When I was at Bloomberg as the CISO for Bloomberg Black or Bloomberg Personal Wealth, I was very technical. I helped actually design the network infrastructure because Bloomberg was a B2B company and here we were building a B2C type of product and we needed to keep them separate. So I had to convince senior management that this isolation was important. And that included doing everything from network design to application system architecture. So I was very technical in that role. So it depends on the role and depends on what the organization needs. I think the problem I see is that sometimes there's a lot of mismatches. You bring in someone with very high credentials into a role where those credentials aren't necessary to the success. So if you bring in a technical CISO to someone that's dealing with just business risk, they're going to fail because people say they micromanage. And if you bring in a high-level CISO or strategic CISO into something that where there's no headcount, they're going to fail because they don't have the understanding of what's needed to make that plan move forward.
So we're looking for something, a skill set that is broad and versatile.
Well, yeah, and it has to match the needs of the organization, right? So large organizations are very broad and very hierarchical and have different needs than a small organization that where a single person may wear many hats.
Chad, anything to add?
Yeah, you know, John, I think that's a really good point, particularly when it gets into the recruiting and the hiring strategy, particularly building out the security team as you're looking for perhaps a deputy CISO hiring within or other BISOs or just other directors or managers, even security analysts, thinking about a long-term strategy for those people and giving them the ability to work their way through the ranks by assessing, you know, certainly sometimes there are more tactical positions where somebody begins, but there's mentorship opportunities to get them to think more strategically and start looking at the security program as a strategic function of the broader business concepts and what's being achieved. And I think those are opportunities for, kind of going with your theme earlier, you mentioned of being a proponent of hiring within and being able to recruit some of that talent, maybe 3, 4, 5 years in advance of needing those people to step into those leadership roles. So I think those are all great considerations and part of almost gets really into part of a hiring and retention strategy as well, which is just as relevant as the succession planning topic we're speaking about today.
Yeah, the hiring planning is very interesting because, again, there's no standards of job performance requirements for the CISO or even for even a security analyst. It's so broad or so ambiguous sometimes that it becomes an issue with hiring.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the challenge that some of the, you know, the great resignation concept, people having a hard time finding qualified resources in cybersecurity. And the big push, obviously, within higher ed to get more people trained and through the curriculum to get them into the workforce. While at the same time, I think we need to look maybe a little bit outside the box on what our hiring requirements are, such as does a four-year degree, is that still relevant for a SOC analyst, right? Or other certain positions within the cybersecurity program, broadly speaking. And so I think there's more innovation that can occur. I think it's occurring in pockets. And I think broadly across the market, we'll start to see more and more of those changes as the need for talent just dramatically increases over time.
Part of being brought on as a new CISO is to start building your succession plan from the get-go, right? So, and it sounds weird, but actually it helps you determine your own priorities and determine what you want to achieve when you come into that new role. So by building the succession or starting to thinking about succession when you take on that new job helps you build your own platform.
That's very interesting. I haven't thought of it that way before or heard anybody else describe it in that way, but I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense. Kind of checks both boxes, right? Focusing on the future of the security program and priorities, while at the same time looking to backfill the position at some point later in the future.
Go ready ahead. For my weird question?
I'm ready.
All right. Let me just say, disclaimer, I'm only saying that it's a weird question because I'm using a word that's been incredibly politicized lately, and I do not mean it that way. I mean it in the best way possible. Do you believe in grooming your successor?
Yes. You're right. Grooming has that negative connotation. So there's this whole idea of coaching, mentoring, and championing. So I've written a whole article on that, but the idea of coaching or the idea of mentoring is a passive ability to groom someone or help someone with their own career. As a mentor, you don't have any stake in that person's career. So if they're successful, great. If they're not successful, great. You know, it doesn't affect you. However, being a champion is the exact opposite. Being a champion is you're putting your political capital behind this person. You're promoting them in a specific project or time frame. So that way, when they succeed, you succeed. And if they fail, your reputation is tarnished. So there's two different ends of the gamut with that. So grooming, yes, has that negative connotation, but there's different ways of grooming. And you have to pick the right one feels right to your organization. And again, I'm a big fan of promoting from within. If people are willing, there are people who are willing that don't have the chops, and the people have the chops that like to be where they are. They don't want to move into that business risk side of things. That was a long answer to a very weird question. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for indulging my weird question. I really appreciate it. And to follow up, How does the relationship handoff work? Let's say both internally and externally, are we talking about, 6 months in advance before your last day? Are you taking them out to dinner? Are you, making formal introductions? Are you for external relationships? Are you making formal introductions to other business leaders? Or do you kind of envision this roadmap and saying, these are the people you need to talk to, tell them I sent you? How does that practically look in your mind?
So there are soft introductions and hard introductions. So let's take the scenario where I'm the outgoing CISO, I'm on garden leave, and we're bringing in a new CISO, so there's some overlap. It actually makes sense for me to go and have meetings, whether face-to-face or through Zoom in these days, with the new executives and saying, hey, this is who we brought in, and show continuity. That makes the executive level and the board very comfortable that the old guard and the new guard, even though they don't see eye to eye, they're doing that handoff explicitly. That means a lot. Just sending a memo to the board is great, but doing it face to face or doing it, in person or again over Zoom where both parties are available is great. Now let's take the other scenario where the CISO has already left for some reason, and the new CISO comes in, and the new CISO reports, say, to the CIO. Having that CIO, again, explicitly introduce the new CISO to the new executives, to the board, either through Zoom or face-to-face, is really important, again, because it builds a level of comfort, and that allows the CISO to start at a little bit higher than having to introduce themselves and having to build that political capital.
Let's say there are CISOs out there who say, it's kind of nice to have a succession plan, but I don't really need one. For whatever reason, maybe as you've called it, call them challenges. Maybe there are too many challenges in the closet that they don't want to expose. It seems to be kind of a vulnerable position to put oneself in. What would you say to those leaders who are really hesitant to develop a succession plan, particularly those who might have a little bit too many skeletons in the closet in terms of the challenges that they've dealt with? Maybe they haven't solved all of them. How far in advance should they start planning? And how would you convince them that a plan would be a positive rather than a negative?
So Josh, you bring up a really common issue. So it's not always the CISO that develops a succession plan. It might be the CIO or some executive person. But a lot of times, a lot is held back from the new CISO because of the skeletons in the closet, or they don't realize what they're getting into. And that happens more often than you think. I do have a few peers that have taken several jobs with some high-end companies that you thought were really on the top of their security game, and they go there and there's no security plan. There's no security vision. They're very immature in their operations. And, again, I hear from my peers, and it's not public information, but that happens a lot. And so what you need to do if you're interviewing for a CISO, right? When you're interviewing a person for a CISO position, you usually ask the person why they want that job at this company or at this organization. But as a candidate, you should be asking, why are you hiring a new CISO? What happened to the old CISO? They should be very transparent about it. And you should be asking questions about their existing security issues or existing security model, where they are with the maturity, where they, ask the really tough questions ahead of time. So at least you know what you're getting into. It's okay to take a job with a CISO position with a company or an organization that isn't mature, as long as you know that going in.
So you would say that the organization should be very
transparent
with the maturity of their security program at the time.
If they aren't, then they're going to have a high level of turnover with the CISO position. It's not rocket science.
Thanks, John. Very, very, very good responses. You're so thorough with your responses that as soon as I can come up with a question, you've answered it. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I can see why you're at the top of your game. And, this is really valuable to our listeners. I think it's very enlightening for me as well. So do you plan, and this is digging in a little bit deep, do you plan to leave your position anytime in the near future, or are your thoughts on succession planning more in line with what you said? Just having a succession plan allows you to prioritize, do your job better, or is there any weight behind it? What got you started thinking about succession planning?
When I did take the job at Proofpoint, and again, whenever you take any type of job, no matter what role you're in, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That's usually a common question. Nobody really cares about the answer. But coming into a job, you should be thinking about, how long will I be relevant in this position? How long will I be impactful in this position? And yes, when I took the job at Proofpoint, I gave myself an X number of years where my relevancy will diminish over time. And that's important to know, because if you're not self-aware of your ability to serve, then what happens is layoffs or changes in organization will be a surprise to you. If you're very aware of where your relevancy is and what that diminishing year-over-year decline is on your relevancy, you're prepared to take the next step or change roles or pivot within that organization to have a longer tenure at that organization or move on to another organization. And so I knew that when I joined Bloomberg, I knew that when I joined Bank of America, and I knew that and I expressed that when I joined Proofpoint. So my manager and their manager at Proofpoint knew exactly what I was getting into and what my outlook was. And again, transparency is really important, because when there's no surprises. So if I say hit that upper limit after 4 or 5 years, and my boss is seeing that, we can have an honest conversation about reaching that limit and saying, okay, how are we going to pivot?
So is that limit based on external factors, kind of like, you know, technology's moving really quickly? And when you talk about being relevant, is that what you mean, that the external factors can outpace the role that you play at the organization?
You know, it's funny. So I'll sidetrack with a little story. I heard a story today about someone in a large company who was talking about a use case back from 2016 or 2015, which is already 6 years old. And they were talking about a scenario that doesn't really exist anymore because technology has changed so much. Have they become irrelevant? Probably. But that's true. It's because of either keeping yourself educated, keeping yourself out there, understanding what's out there as far as technologies and strategies. I don't want to be the person who basically learned how to program, you know, HP Basic back when Microsoft first came out, IBM first came out with the PC. And that's all my knowledge is based on those type of scenarios. So you have to keep learning. And that's for anybody, not just the C-level, not just executives, but everyone should always be out there learning something new.
Excellent. Thanks, John. I really appreciate your time today. Chad, anything else to add? Any questions before we wrap up?
Yeah, I don't have any questions. This has been a fantastic conversation. And John, appreciate you sharing your knowledge on the topic. And this topic is really interesting because it really just kind of fans out into a number of other discussion points that impact, honestly, a career in cybersecurity.
It's career planning. It's not succession planning. It's career planning, right?
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably a good title for this podcast series, this podcast episode. So I appreciate you being on the show and sharing that knowledge. And Josh, you know, in the spirit of that, appreciate you taking on and running this, this show. And look forward to future episodes.
My pleasure. And has anybody seen the show Succession?
I have not.
I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that up with our topic today. Chad, I think you mentioned that you've gotten into it a little bit.
I have seen it. Yeah, it's kind of like a modern day thriller, pretty far out there, but in a way could possibly be reality at some point.
Does that bear any resemblance to our discussion today?
Not at all. Not at all. That's too high. That's too sci-fi.
There shouldn't be any drama in Succession.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of drama in Succession, but yes, there should not be any drama in Succession. I agree.
Right. John, how do people go ahead and contact you? What's the best way for them to reach out and maybe follow on to this conversation?
Sure. Actually, you can, if you are a Proofpoint customer, you can reach out to your account managers and they can contact me directly. But if you are not a Proofpoint customer, you can actually email me at jcheco@proofpoint.com.
Excellent. It was fantastic having you on the show. And I feel like I made another great professional connection today. So appreciate that, John.
Well, thank you, Chad. And thank you, Josh.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Chad.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Security podcast brought to you by TrustMap. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss on the podcast or would like to continue the conversation, please connect with us on Twitter at @CyberSecPodcast or email us at businessofsecurity@trustsds.com. We want to thank John Checo for being our guest today. Our hosts were Josh Bruning and Chad Beckman. You can connect with both Josh and Chad on LinkedIn and learn more about TrustMap at trustmap.com. Our show is produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire at livewirefilms.com. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.